I told my wife this morning that I was going to do a controversial sermon. And she asked, about what? And I said, Christmas. And she said, how can there be a controversial sermon about Christmas in a Unitarian Universalist church? And I went, oy. How can you say anything about Christmas in a Unitarian Universalist church without it being controversial? Well, last Sunday, I was teaching a class at Temple Sinai in West L.A. And, of course, being a Unitarian minister at Temple Sinai in West Los Angeles, I was teaching about Islam. But before I taught that class, I was in the large room where a panel of distinguished rabbis, including someone whom I consider to be my rabbi, we're talking about Hanukkah. Do you believe in miracles? Do you this? Do you that? How shall we understand it? And then the Christmas question came to the panel of rabbis. What do you do about Christmas? They were much easier to deal with than Unitarians. The Orthodox rabbi gave the answer that you would kind of expect, the Holy Trinity of yours, mine, and ours. Hanukkah is ours. Christmas is theirs. Seasonal greetings is ours. The Reform rabbi wandered a little bit. I'm not quite sure what the position was. But Rabbi Steve Carr Rubin said something that was astounding. He said, I love Christmas. And I, sitting there thinking, well, you know, if my rabbi can love Christmas as a Unitarian minister, I'm coming out of the closet. I love Christmas, too. Christmas is a good time, as Dickens said, and in fact, he referenced the Dickens quote. Christmas is a good time, a kind time, a time when people, and he paraphrased, show up at the shelters, give special donations, act as if we were, in fact, related to each other and not different creatures on separate journeys to an uncommon destination, but that we are bound together at Christmas time, and there are feelings of connectedness and of joy and of giving and of generosity that come with the season. Wow, what a relief. It was not the narrow, proprietary, yours, mine, and ours, but a sense of the wonderful and really unique Creole gumbo that America is. Last week, I talked a bit about how can you understand Hanukkah outside of the context of Western civilization? How can you understand it without acknowledging the influence that Christmas and Christendom has had on it, in making a minor festival into a major tzimis, into a big deal, and a reaction? How can you understand Christmas without understanding all of the influences that have been put upon it? Coincidentally, if you believe in coincidence, that same week, one of my students at the university in a class in philosophy asked me, can you take the thread of Judaism that runs throughout history and take it out and examine it apart and on its own unique contributions? And my immediate answer and my considered answer is absolutely not. There is no purity of religion, no purity of culture. All of us are where our people have been. All of us and all peoples and ethnicities and religions leave DNA in the cultures that they pass through and acquire DNA. And to pull a thread out and to try to rid it of outside influences, to try to find some point of mythical purity is to eviscerate it. It is to open up a holiday and a holy day and to take the living heart out of it. We can't understand Christmas without everything that Christmas has picked up. Would the early church fathers recognize Santa Claus? And what would they know from figgy pudding? What would they know from even the date of Christmas, which is not historic? It is the birthday of Mithra and the birthday of Saturn. It is a solstice celebration. So is the answer to genericize it, to just say, happy solstice celebration of your choice? Let's make it really safe and inoffensive as we have with the hymns, because we can't say goodwill to men, so we change the words around and make it to all. And I understand that. I'm not speaking against it, but we can go so far in our political correctness that we take the life and the joy out of our differences. And we are different, and as Unitarian Universalists, we're supposed to celebrate that. We're supposed to be informed and nourished by our differences and not threatened by them. Once upon a time, when I was very young, in Berkeley in the late 60s, liberal meant that we didn't know how to say no to anything. Today, religious liberalism seems to mean we don't know how to say yes to anything. And we look for something that is safe and generic. How can I be for something that is safe and generic in worship, in ecstasy, in inspiration, when the people who say they want safe art, I oppose and I stand against and say there is no safe art? Well, at the very core issues of what religion is, how we get a sense of meaning, a sense of caring, a sense of connectedness to each other, how can I take the symbols that inform, nourish, and motivate people and say, not in my presence, please, because they are not mine? Some of the most inspirational moments that I have experienced as a human being have been in religious settings, not of my own heritage and tradition. I have stood by at mosques as people prayed, as they chanted the Quran, and I have been moved by their faith, moved by their openness and kindness to me, on how their reciting of God the Merciful, the Compassionate, in fact touched them and made them act towards me in a merciful and compassionate way, offering me hospitality and friendship. If one of them wishes me a happy Ramadan or wishes me an easy fast at Yom Kippur, and my Muslim neighbors do wish me an easy fast at Yom Kippur, I am delighted by that. In fact, I observed Ramadan, the daylight fast, 2 years while I was living in North Africa in a Muslim country. Part of that was just out of respect, and part of it, to tell you the truth, was self-preservation. I wasn't about to go into the salle de prof with 300 very hungry and touchy Muslim professors and open up a corned beef sandwich. It just seemed like a bad career move. But I observed Ramadan and felt a part of a faith that was not mine, but I was open to be touched by it. It was a Muslim country. That's fine. The issue is not if it's a Muslim country, but how people and culture tolerate, accept, and greet each other. I felt very accepted. Another great religious experience was a midnight mass in the Austrian Alps, not very far from where Silent Night had been written. The people in the town paraded through the snow, carrying actual torches, not flashlights, going into a tiny church, and I can still feel the warmth. I can still feel the bodies huddled together against the dark and the cold. I can hear the trumpets blasting out a song of thanksgiving and of joy when midnight came and they sang Joy to the World. I can remember, as the closed, singing Silent Night in German as we recessed, our torches lit again. It was not my faith. I was an observer and a participant, open to be touched in my heart by their faith, their hope. And it's a faith and a hope that I think that all humanity shares, but we have different sources and different symbols from where we get it. it's too easy just to look at Christmas and say, you know, it's a religious holiday, it's a secular holiday, how shall we understand it? It's too easy to conflate all of the complexities of Christmas and treat it as if it were simple. Christmas isn't simple. There is the holiday, the holy day, and holy night of faith. And that is Christian. This is a celebration of a particular birth of Jesus who becomes the risen Christ and the Savior for Christians who believe. It is their celebration, and I am happy to acknowledge it, to stand by its universal elements, even if it is not my literal theology nor my patrimony. There is also the Christmas of history, problematic, filled with untruths and half-truths. No, not quite. Filled with things that may not be factual, but very much are true. So the date is wrong. Mithra and Saturn's birthday. So he was probably born in Nazareth. So the details of history we can all look at and change and question, but the truths of Christmas remain beyond the facts. It is a celebration of birth. It is a celebration of the miracle of love becoming flesh. The miracle and the hope that is renewed at every birth and in every generation that this miracle of life needs people to stand by in wonder, to bring to it their gifts of time and of treasure and of caring. It is an acknowledgement of just how vulnerable new life is and how it must call out to us. If, for Christians, God can be at a vulnerable moment, all of our children are at vulnerable moments, and they need us. And Christmas is the big yes. Yes to hope, yes to new life, yes to our need to be committed to a future beyond ourselves. Then there's the third Christmas, the secularized, safe, commercial Christmas, the Christmas that screams to us from the malls, you feel empty, you feel hollow, fill it with stuff. Fill it with all of, empty your credit cards and fill your trunks and take home lots of stuff. That's safe. That's generic. Season's greetings. Generic holiday Santas and elves, which the early church wouldn't have recognized those Santas or elves anyway. What profited us? Well, we know who it profits, but what is the point of that? The real Christmas that people of Christian faith and non-Christian faith can share is that Christmas is a good time, a kind time, a time when we feel connected to life. Ridding our society of those religious symbols and images, I know, is a popular thing to do in some circles. I know that people are offended by a Christmas tree in the White House. I guess it wouldn't be a Hanukkah bush, would it? It would be a Christmas bush in the White House. I know that there are lots of people who look around and say, all of these religious symbols, how are we going to accept that if we are a large and diverse country? How can there just be this holiday, and doesn't make any difference that there was a Hanukkah celebration at the White House, that a menorah was lit, then the conversation shifts to, well, that's okay, but what about the Muslims? What about the Buddhists? What about the humanists? What about the atheists? Don't they feel bad? Can't we have a party? I mean, really, can't we have a party? Must society be held accountable to the most exquisitely sensitive people in the world, we need to acknowledge that not everybody is Christian. I'm not Christian. We need to acknowledge that not everybody is religious, that not everyone has the same background. But America is this wonderful Creole gumbo in which we put in and we take out what we need. And it seems to me that the value is that we can learn at the holidays and at the holy days is one of giving and of tolerance. It's a slippery, I know it's always a slippery slope. It is a slippery slope to get rid of all of the images that offend us, to strip Christmas of the Christmas tree, which wasn't Christian in the first place. It was Norse. To strip Christmas of the Christmas goose, which wasn't indigenous either. To strip Christmas of all of those things and to rid society of theological discourse. But remember the DNA. Remember what we leave and what we take. And the founders of this country did not found it as a Christian nation, but they found it bringing their own histories and traditions, the good lessons that they learned about the internecine fratricidal wars between religious sects. And so they did their best not to have a state religion, but also not to get in the way of people stating their religion to each other. And I have a terrible fear that when we go through and purge our holidays of content and meaning, we end up with only the commercial and secularized Christmas. When we start stripping away all of the substance, all of the content, I wonder what will move our hearts and open our hearts to give. And once we start stripping away Christmas and making it a generic holiday, let's go on and get rid of Santa Monica and change the town's name to Monica, because some people don't believe in saints. Let's change Los Angeles to just Los, because some people don't believe in angels, and angels don't believe in Anaheim. It's all very, very strange. And as long as we're at it, let our guide be those Puritans who said, look, let's not have any festivities. This is a solemn, dour time, and anybody who parties is clearly committing a sin. I mean, Christmas was looked on by many of the Pilgrims and Puritans as just a terrible idea, and they put up with it rather like Paul talked about sex. It's better not to do it, but if you have to, get married. Not if you have to get married, but I mean, if you get, you know what I mean. You can put up with Christmas, but it's better to be able to transcend these kinds of earthly parties and celebrations. I don't want to be like the Taliban who tore down those Buddhist statues, because those Buddhist statues were an affront, a real affront to their religion. It is the greatest sin in Islam to have idolatry. And those statues, those huge, gorgeous statues carved into the living rock, were an affront to their religion, and they felt moved to destroy them. If I don't approve of that, how can I approve of getting rid of the Christmas tree, of getting rid of other people's celebrations? Why can I not stand by and celebrate and be and partake in the gumbo and contribute to the gumbo, which in fact I do, and we do, and all races and cultures in fact do? My wife's school has a Christmas party every year. Sometimes it's a holiday party, but it's a Christmas party. There's a Christmas tree. We go to it. It's wonderful. We sing hymns openly and full-throatedly, and why not? Just because I don't believe in virgins conceiving, and I might be asking my daughter or granddaughter a few more questions when she shows up and says God made her pregnant, doesn't mean that I can't, don't go there. About to really get into trouble. Why can't I sing it? As the Reverend Emily Champagne said, you can go to De Benneville and sing Give Me a Home Where the Buffalo Roam, where you don't want a home where the buffalo roam, and not feel like hypocrites. Why not sing open-heartedly the songs of Christmas and partake in tidings of comfort and joy? Why rid it of content? At my wife's party, it's a tremendous time. I don't need one corner in blue and white. I'm acknowledged as a human being, and I can be a part of their party. And if I want to have a Hanukkah party, they can come to it also, and they do. They ask my wife to go in and explain Hanukkah to all the children in her elementary center, and she does. And people share who we are and the travels that we've gone through as families and extended families to get where we are. If people want to get rid of Christmas and banish all of the parts that are religious, what would the reaction be if letters came home from fundamentalist Christians that said, we're going to get rid of everything Jewish in Christmas? Well, there go 8 of the top 10 Christmas songs sold in the United States. There goes Rudolph. There goes Holly Jolly Christmas. There goes White Christmas. There goes the Christmas song. So I guess the real question is, so what's Jewish about Christmas? That was supposed to be beat. Well, there is Jesus.